This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, back live in studio. Have you ever looked at a map of the United States that doesn't have state border lines? I bet you could still find our state of Illinois. That's because most of our borders are defined by waterways, the Mississippi River to the west and the Wabash and Ohio rivers to the south. These inland waterways play an essential role in the state's economy and ecology, and the Mississippi in particular is a crucial link in global supply chains. But right now, rivers across the state are facing a severe drought, with water levels continuing to sink. In fact, the Mississippi River has seen record low water levels, leading to shipping delays and a huge jump in costs. Joining us now to talk about the severe river drought is Deb Calhoun, Senior Vice President of Waterways Council, which advocates for modern and well-maintained ports and inland waterways. Deb, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much.
Also joining us is James Everett, Senior Manager of the Tennessee Valley Authority's River Forecast Center, which helps manage the Tennessee River, which influences portions of the lower Ohio River near Caro, Illinois. James, welcome to the show to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. What have you heard about low river levels across Illinois, especially if you are a farmer or come from a farm family? Has this affected your ability to get goods to market? Let us know what you're seeing out there. 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21ST Show. So, James, I want to start with you. What is the current state of the rivers you keep an eye on?
Sure. Yeah. So I'll give a little bit of background of just the Tennessee Valley Authority and who we are and where we fit into this picture, especially when we talk about flows on the Ohio River and the Mississippi River. The Tennessee Valley Authority, or TVA, we manage a system of dams, 49 dams, across about seven states in the southeastern U.S. We have actually seen pretty close to normal rainfall in our territory for the bulk of the calendar year. Things have gone a little drier than normal there towards October and November, but we did see some relief recently with some of the rainfall remnants that came through with Nicole, as the remnants from Tropical Storm and Hurricane Nicole brought us some much needed rainfall. But yeah, TVA system of dams was really built, and with navigation, commercial navigation, and providing a reliable navigable channel from Paducah, Kentucky, all the way up to Knoxville, Tennessee, across the 652-mile length of the Tennessee River. And so our series of dams regulate water levels to maintain navigable depths year-round. And it's one of the great advantages of having a system of dams to be able to regulate water flows, is to provide that navigable depth. And so that's kind of a picture of how we're seeing things on the Tennessee River. Now with flows down into the Ohio and the Mississippi River, certainly as the flows receded on the Ohio and the Mississippi River, we've been able to supplement releases from the Tennessee River and work with the Army Corps of Engineers to supplement releases out of the Cumberland River. TVA also plays a role there in managing those releases out of the Cumberland. So the releases from those two dams at Kentucky Dam and Barclay Dam certainly helped to stabilize and regulate river flow back into the lower Ohio and Mississippi River, which has been a benefit here as things got dry.
Well, Deb, what about you? You have a picture of broader waterways beyond what the Tennessee Valley Authority manages. I've read about shipping delays. You know, take a trip that would take 20 days to go from St. Louis to New Orleans might now take 40, or I may have those numbers slightly off. But what else is going on out there in terms of rivers and commerce?
Well, yes, we have seen historic low water that we really haven't seen since 1988. There was also a drought in 2012. Right now we are improving in some spots with some of the recent rain and some snow melt, but we are not quite out of the woods yet. We really need some steady, sustained heavy rains to make up the deficit. The current low water has meant reductions in the size of barge tows. So normally we have 40 or more barges put together in a tow configuration that's moving these key commodities to the export market or for use domestically. That has been reduced by half, so about 20 barges or less in a tow. It's also meant lighter loads to adhere to some of the draft restrictions that are set up by the U.S. Coast Guard. And at the worst time in mid-October, there were more than 2,000 barges backed up in one of the areas awaiting transit while the Corps of Engineers was dredging. Those rivers were closed. So those spots on the rivers were closed for 24-hour periods or longer. And luckily, we are seeing commerce moving, albeit slowly and inefficiently. As I said, things are improving, but we're just not quite out of the woods yet.
You know, for our listeners who did not grow up near the rivers, maybe you can just talk a little bit about what travels on barges, how this fits into the global supply chain. What products are we talking about?
Yes, well, the inland waterways move what we call America's building block commodities. So 60% of our U.S. grain for export is moving by the inland waterway system, coal and energy products, some specialty chemicals that are inputs to the manufacturing process, aggregate materials like steel, sand, gravel for construction, large cargoes like wind turbine blades, and also NASA uses the inland waterways for some of its space shuttle parts. And so this is a critical part, as you said, of the transportation supply chain. It is the most cost competitive way for our American family farmers, for example, to move their harvested goods. We're coming to the end of harvest here in the United States, but to move those agricultural products to the export market and to those world buyers. I think from a global perspective, the war in Ukraine has really underscored the importance of the U.S. inland waterway system as a key part of our transportation system and of that supply chain. Ukraine is known as the breadbasket of Europe, and Russia has been supplying energy products and coal to Europe. So that means that those global buyers have turned to the United States for coal, for example, and for agriculture products. So the low water disruptions here in this country have further challenged the delivery of those key products to feed the world and to heat the world.
And I understand that prices are coming down now, but there was a huge spike. I remember, well, in the context of preparing for this, I learned about, what is it, the St. Louis barge price? There's like a spot price that people watch. If you, you know, let's say you have some product you want to ship by barge, maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Right. Well, at the height of the disruption, which was really in October, the spot rates for barge freight was extremely high. The price of soybeans increased 300% during the height of this low water disruption. Some farmers were turned away at grain terminals because of lack of barges to load their products. They just weren't where they needed to be to come back as empties and to be loaded at these various grain terminals throughout the Midwest. Fertilizer, which was already at a pretty high price, was pricing even higher. And so that will impact farmers' bottom line all around. You know, this is a two-way river. So fertilizer, for example, and agricultural inputs move upriver for spring planting, and then all of that finished corn and beans and other products are moving downriver to the export market or to be used here domestically. We haven't really seen consumer impacts quite yet. We could. It could mean higher costs for meat at the grocery store or higher electricity costs or higher costs for building and construction materials. So there were certainly impacts primarily to the American family farmer during the height of the disruption.
And Deb, can you just talk about how barge traffic fits into the broader transportation picture? We talked about some of the things that move by barge, from NASA components to windmill blades and a lot of commodities. But how does it compare in terms of efficiency and cost with trucking, for example, or railroad?
Yes. Well, we are very much an intermodal society, so we're dependent upon all modes of transportation. But the inland waterways are, as I said, the most cost-competitive way to move these products. They are also the most fuel-efficient, which is certainly something that we're all focused on. Their most environmentally friendly mode, which is critically important as well. It's the safest mode, and it is traffic congestion relieving on our highways. For example, one barge is equal to 70 trucks. So sort of a standard 15 barge tow is equal to 1,050 trucks. and 216 rail cars and 6 locomotives. So, for example, a 42 barge tow is equal to 43 miles of trucks on our highways. So if you were to remove this critical part as a transportation option and part of the supply chain, you would have utter gridlock on our highways and railways. And so, you know, we all need to cooperate and barges and the inland waterways are not a just-in-time mode. So you're talking about those bulk commodities that I mentioned. So not your sneakers or your TV sets or your electronics that, you know, you could get more quickly in another mode. But certainly those building block commodities, this is the best way to move it among surface transportation.
No, you're not sending a book to your grandma by barge for her birthday.
That's right. It'll take a lot longer than 12 hours to get to you.
All right. Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about low water levels on the Mississippi River, the lowest that people have seen certainly since 2012, since 1988 was another big drought year, and the effects that has had on commerce and also the environment, potentially. We're talking about this with Deb Calhoun, with the Waterways Council, which advocates for well-maintained ports and inland waterways. Also, James Everett, senior manager of the Tennessee Valley Authority's River Forecast Center. And James, let me ask you about some of the other effects of low water levels on rivers, and that can affect drinking water for some people, right?
Yes. When you think about the different uses for the water in a river, we've talked a lot already about the navigation and the waterway and its benefit to the movement of commerce goods across the region and nation and even world. But these river systems also support a lot of other benefits. For TVA's perspective in the Tennessee Valley, these rivers are also providing hydroelectricity. Is one benefit to talk about. 29 power producing plants that make up a portion of TVA's energy mix, which helps us meet residential and large industrial loads for about 10 million people. But certainly, yes, like you mentioned, water supply for communities, these industries that are co-located with the river, a lot of times depend on a water supply for processed water or cooling water or whatnot. And so the droughts and low water levels can impact that water quality. Think about water temperatures and the environment. And so TVA works to use our system of dams to provide somewhat of a buffer against these periods of either dry or wet conditions. During the dry conditions, we can use water that we've stored in those 49 dams to kind of supplement flow back into the river to meet those benefits that I just talked about and meet those objectives for water supply and water quality, maintain navigable depths. In the Tennessee Valley, we maintain a depth for at least an 11-foot draft and across that 652-mile waterway from Paducah to Knoxville. But certainly, I guess on the other thing too, I might mention in the wet periods in the Tennessee Valley between 2018 and 2020, we saw 3 of our wettest years on record. And so these river systems also have the potential for flooding and flood damage. So our series of dams in the Tennessee Valley work together in concert to help reduce flood levels as well when we're looking at wet conditions. So it's managed, the way we look at it is managing it as an integrated system. And we do that dynamically based on the weather and hydrology. We do that based on typical trends and patterns. And we use reservoirs, deep storage reservoirs up in the mountains of East Tennessee and Western North Carolina and areas of Georgia and Virginia to store water so that we can send water back into the main stem of the Tennessee River and eventually the Ohio and the Mississippi when things turn dry.
Well, let me ask about that. It fascinates me that I could take a canoe, a few miles from our studio here in Urbana, Illinois, and put it in the Sangamon River and eventually make my way through the Illinois over to the Mississippi and down to New Orleans if I wanted to. But how much does the water you control, like how much water does it actually take to replenish the lower Mississippi? Because there are so many other rivers flowing into it. I mean, we're talking about a huge portion of our country, right?
Sure, yeah. When you look at the drainage area, the territory, the terrain that supplies water into the Mississippi River, it covers, I think, about 60% or more of the continental U.S. And so when you think about the Tennessee and the Cumberland rivers, those two river systems as tributaries to the Ohio are just a small portion of that larger terrain. So we are fortunate in the Southeast and in the Tennessee River and the Cumberland River valleys that we receive about 50 to 51 inches of rainfall on average a year. In 2018 through 2020, we were receiving over 60 to close to 70 inches of rainfall. So we're on track this year. We're actually trending a little bit above normal for the calendar year in terms of rainfall. And at times when we have low water on the Ohio and the Mississippi, I think you can look back at the 2012 drought. Some of the low water that we saw back in October flows from the Tennessee and the Cumberland can make up, 20 to 30% or greater sometimes of the entire flow in the lower Ohio, which can make up a significant portion of the flow in the Mississippi. And so when we see those conditions, we are in close coordination with federal partners like the National Weather Service, the Army Corps of Engineers, the Coast Guard, the navigation industry partners to develop operating plans and strategies to make sure that the water that we do have, specifically coming out of the Tennessee and the Cumberland rivers, is released in a way that minimizes any sort of impacts to water levels downstream. So what that means for us is the water that we do have coming through the Tennessee and the Cumberland, a lot of times we steady that water out to provide much more stable water levels in the river systems below the Tennessee and the Cumberland.
All right, we're going to continue this conversation after a short break. If you want to join us, the number is 800-222-9455, especially if you are a farmer or have farmers in your family. Has the low river level on the Mississippi affected your family's ability to get goods to market? Or if you have just been, if you live near a river, seen something interesting because of the low levels, let us know about it. 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are speaking about low water levels on the Mississippi River and how that is affecting commerce and the environment as well. Barge operators have had significant delays. There's have to be dredging in order to make parts of the river navigable. The amount of goods that can be shipped has had to be curtailed. The number of individual, I'm going to get the term wrong, but barge units that are sort of bound together into a tow to be pushed down the river has had to be constrained somewhat. We're talking about all this with James Everett, who is with the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority, and their River Forecast Center. Also, Deb Calhoun of Waterways Council, which advocates for inland waterways and ports. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation on the show today. That's 800-222-9455. So, Deb, from the perspective of the individual farmer, how does this affect what their experience of the harvest will be? I mean, are the crops at risk of rotting out there on the barges while they're being delayed going downriver?
We haven't seen that occur yet in this current disruption with the low water. As I said, some farmers have been turned away at grain terminals because there were just simply not barges to load. And so they sort of had to turn back and store that product until there was some availability of barges. Things are improving a bit on the system with recent rains, as I initially said. So we haven't seen anything that drastic yet, but certainly we have seen, as James has said, we've seen high water and low water, and sometimes in the same shipping season. So while this is such a benefit of a transportation option to farmers and the most cost competitive way for them to get their products to those global buyers, We are aware that, you know, there can be high or low water, and we just have to manage those situations and those disruptions as they come. So one day at a time, and I think our American family farmers are certainly resilient and they know the drill.
James, what about that high water levels? How does, I think it's intuitive for people why low water would be a big problem for getting boats moving on a river. Why is high water a problem?
Yeah, so, you know, safe navigation of the waterways is certainly a huge consideration here. When on the Tennessee River, we have certain flows and elevations where the currents and the movement of the water actually makes it difficult for barges to move. And so high water can also be a challenge, and something that we use a system of dams that in the winter months we're looking to have storage available in those dams. If you think about maybe like an empty bathtub, we sometimes try to have those water levels lower so we can be prepared for a large flood event, to use dams to store that water to prevent, you know, some of those high currents and high velocities that can be experienced on a river system. Same thing with that bathtub in the summer months. In the fall, we want to have water available to release from dams, and so that we can kind of slowly let that water out through the drain, yet still preserve some of that water to get us through what could be a long, you know, more of a long-term situation. I think Deb covered it well, that although we've seen some recent relief and welcomed relief and rainfall and river levels, we're certainly not out of the woods. And so that's one thing that we do here in TVA's River Forecast Center is around the clock, we are monitoring rainfall conditions, the releases from all 49 dams. We are coming up with strategies and operating plans to optimize the use of that water to meet today's objectives for a lot of the things we talked about, for navigation, but also power production, water supply, water quality, all the different benefits that these rivers provide. So not to meet those short-term benefits, but also come up with operating plans that can weather through and dampen the effects of what we could see with these longer-term low flow or drought conditions. So yeah, a huge part there, and looking at being adaptive to changing weather. Deb again covered it. Sometimes we can see the varied high and low end of river flows in the same year or the same season even.
James, to what extent is climate change part of the story here in low river levels, high river levels? Is this something we need to expect more of in the years ahead?
I think from our perspective, one of the major things that we want to understand better are the magnitudes of these extreme events. And so we've got some TVA has some studies going on and some research that we're collaborating with Department of Energy and Oak Ridge National Lab, which is here near Knoxville, Tennessee, where we're taking a look at those climate impacts. And we are assessing how resilient these reservoirs and dams can be as you amplify the magnitude of those climate extremes. For example, in 2020, we saw our wettest year on record. We had close to 70 inches of rainfall in the Tennessee Valley, which is nearly 20 inches above normal. So as you increase the amplitude and the magnitude of these extreme events on both the drought end, the dry end, and the wet end, how resilient can these systems be? Another example I'll use is some pretty extreme drought that we saw. The drought of record we saw in the Tennessee Valley occurred in 2007 and 2008. And that was a time that even during those drought periods for us, we were able to use the water that we had stored in reservoirs to release water back into the system and still meet objectives for, you know, navigable depths, maintain the navigable channel for that 652-mile stretch of river between Paducah and Knoxville. So obviously climate change is something that's important to us and something that we continue to look at and try and understand and prepare and plan for, and specifically to prepare and plan for the, you know, potential increase in these climate extremes.
Deb, your organization advocates for, as I mentioned, well-maintained ports and inland waterways. Do you find yourself having to explain to people the importance of inland waterways? I mean, certainly there's a lot of news media and public official attention on the coastal ports, and all of us have learned a lot about that as we've learned about the importance of global supply chains. But do you find yourself having to educate people about the importance of the inland waterways?
Well, I do think that the inland waterways are sometimes out of sight, out of mind. You know, we drive our cars next to trucks on highways. We wait at railroad crossings when rail cars are going by. So, we can see that and we can feel what that feels like, and we can understand that better than the inland waterways. Unless you're driving over a bridge in the Midwest and you look down and you see barges moving, you wouldn't really understand the sheer capacity of those barges, what is in them, where they're going, the impact to our economy. Even just in the state of Illinois, nearly 236,000 jobs are related in some way to the inland waterways. So there's a great impact to the workforce across the country related to the inland waterways. But I do think in a disruption like we're seeing currently with low water, or in high water that could be coming ahead that we've talked about, I think that really underscores the importance of this system. And, never waste a crisis. Of course, the media has been very interested in what's happening, and will the river shut down, and will commerce move, and will harvest get to those buyers here in the U.S. and throughout the world. So I think it's really shined a light on the important work that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers does, all the dredging work, the need to continue to invest in this system. As I said, the inland waterways are critical to our transportation options for all those shippers that are moving that freight to their final destinations. So it's something that I think it certainly raised the awareness of how important this system is. The Mississippi River is really probably the big reason Thomas Jefferson bought the place, if you will, and it's a natural gem to the United States, and so it's something that we do need to understand and appreciate and continue to invest in.
Deb, what long-term changes do you want to see, improvements or anything else in terms of river commerce on the Mississippi and beyond?
Well, what's happening now is we need to make sure that what's called operations and maintenance funding remains high for the Corps of Engineers. In the recent infrastructure bill that was passed, the inland waterways received $2.5 billion with a B. Usually we deal in millions, but $2.5 billion came to the inland waterways for maintaining the efficiency and modernizing the system. So really building auxiliary locks for those locks that are currently in place to keep that commerce moving and keeping the rivers navigable. That, a lot of those locks were built in the 1930s and 1940s during the first New Deal, if you will. So this infrastructure package is really critical, and we are looking to modernize many of those locks across the system. But as I said, operations and maintenance funding, which is a fully federal responsibility that makes sure that the Corps has the funding it needs to do the dredging and the channel maintenance, that is so, so important, and we're seeing it play out right now. There may be some need for emergency supplemental funding for the Corps ahead to continue their dredging and to make sure that they're ready for the next event that comes down the pike. And so just the need to invest in the system is what we want to continue to see happen in the United States.
James, of course, the TVA was a key component of the first New Deal, as Deb referred to it there. Are we talk about where is the TVA going in the years ahead in terms of is it simply a question of operations and maintenance right now? Are there new frontiers in terms of river commerce and river management?
Yeah, what a great segue right there for the New Deal. Yeah, so if you think about, we've got some unique relationships when you look at the Tennessee Valley Authority and how we partner with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to own, operate, and maintain locks on the Tennessee River. The Army Corps of Engineers have operations and maintenance responsibility. And I think I couldn't say it any better than Deb that the continued support of that O&M, that operations and maintenance funding to keep these locks in tip-top condition and enhance the auxiliary locks, enhance the infrastructure, and build new infrastructure is something that we look forward to. And we've seen a lot of progress. We have two major construction projects going on locks, which are the chambers that can raise and lower barges along a river system at the dams. And so a brand new lock being built at our Kentucky Dam near Paducah, and a replacement lock being built at the Chickamauga Dam, which is near Chattanooga, Tennessee. Two major, major infrastructure projects, which for us are critical in the movement of goods and materials in and out of the Tennessee and Cumberland River Valley. Huge projects that are going on, and with the funding levels are certainly something that we keep a very close track of, and that partnership between TVA and the Corps of Engineers to see these projects to completion.
James Everett is Senior Manager of the TVA Tennessee Valley Authority's River Forecast Center, and Deb Calhoun is Senior Vice President of Waterways Council. Deb and James, thanks so much for being with us to talk about this today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And that's all the time we have for our show today. Next time on the 21st Show, America is more polarized than just about any other point in recent history, at least. We'll talk with the Illinois coordinators of a nonprofit that's trying to bridge political divides and get people with different views to talk to and or hopefully understand one another. That's coming up on the show tomorrow. Before we go, I want to suggest you subscribe to our podcast. You can do that on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Just search for The 21st, The21ST. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our interns are Owen Henderson, Anaya Jones, and Zainab Qureshi. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.